This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited for today. We've got Matthew McClenaghan. He is the president of Edgar. Edgar is a development company in Metro Vancouver. Really excited to have...
Doing some really interesting stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Really excited to have Matthew on the show today. Really fantastic conversation. I cover a lot of ground today. And there's a ton of takeaways. So super excited.
Yeah, it was great having Matthew on. I feel like we've been talking about getting this episode together since before the summer. So it was great actually connecting with Matthew and a lot of takeaways here for sure. So stay tuned for that. What else do we have before we cut to our talk with Matthew, Adam?
Well, Matt, we have this segment that remains nameless. This is our trivia segment that we have before we jump into the show. And I think you might have a question for me.
I do, Adam. This actually was ripped from some of the data that Rennie produces.
Oh,
So, you know, the team over there, Ryan... And the gang, Ryan Berlin and the gang. I found this one interesting. I think you will too. That is, if you can get it correct. Adam, in the greater Vancouver board area, the median condo price in August 2025 was closest to which figure? $720,000? $686,888?
Wow.
Or $640,442.
Interesting.
But before we get to that, Adam, I want to highlight one of our listings. And we've got a couple of banger listings. And we should say, you know, we talked about the Vancouver Dealmakers event for the last 4 or 5 weeks. That was an incredible event.
Yes.
I think Zonda kind of hit it out of the park there, which is great. But let's get back to one of Scalina Real Estate's hot new listings for the fall market here, Adam. Today, I want to highlight unit 306, 2128 West 40th. This is
nice.
A two-bed and den corner home in Kerrisdale. This is the perfect home for both downsizers and young families. It has an office space, two large bedrooms with really nice separation, beautifully finished, and two outdoor spaces, Adam, not one, but two outdoor spaces right beside the Arbutus Greenway and everything that Kerrisdale has to offer. Incredible listing, parking, huge storage. This is great, like I said, for anyone looking for a walkable lifestyle in one of Vancouver's best neighborhoods. Offered at 129,900. And you can see this listing and get all the information at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
I've been spending a ton of time in Kerrisdale because I've got one of my kids is in a music school on Arbutus. And I have about an hour where I just walk up and down 41st. So that's my new haunt. But so convenient.
Funny you say that because across, there's a new BC Hydro EV charging station right next, right down the street from.
So
from
you're this parked thing. There all the time?
I was parked there charging as I do, new car with EV charging, which we haven't talked about, but you have an EV as well.
If you you ever see me walking aimlessly, that's I'm there for a reason.
So here's the thing. I plugged my car in there, went to Artigiano's down the street. And
no big deal.
Sunny out. It was an incredible hour. Only 35 minutes at the charge station, but incredible hour at Artigiano's. That neighborhood is off the charts. So that's VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Check it out. And while you're there, Adam, click sell with us. when you click sell with us, you can download the sold plan that start on launch date, our most downloaded document to date, to get your home ready for market, get a top dollar, and get it sold fast. That's VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Yes,
back,
Matt.
Back to the quiz question, Adam, though.
You know, the problem with this quiz question is they're all within about like 30 grand of each other. So it's not exactly, it's pretty close.
Well, that's, I was trying to make it a little, I'm saying you're batting about 80 to 85%. I want to make this a little all tricky. Right.
Okay. I'm going to go, so it's Metro Vancouver. So it covers the region.
Actually, it's the Greater Vancouver Board area, Adam.
Oh, interesting. That changes things a little bit.
And this is August 2025, keep in mind.
August 2025. So I'm going to go with, what was the middle one? 670-ish?
It was 686888. Now, Adam, I just want to point out you're going to go with the number that I potentially made up that ends in 888.
Yes, that's, I know, Matt. You're, it's a lucky number, some might say. All right, let's, I'm going to go with that number there.
Oh, I thought that would throw you off. That's why I did 640-444 was the last one. It is. It's 686-888. I can't believe that. That's what actually jumped out to me, that it's such a lucky number for the median condo price in Greater Vancouver right now.
Sounds like a busy fall market is upon us. So Matt, what else, why don't we, I guess we should cut to our conversation. President of Edgar, Matthew McLennigan. He's a great guy, and this is a great conversation.
This is a great conversation. Absolutely. Enjoy.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been recognized as Multifamily Home Builder of the Year for 10 years in a row and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with two fitness areas, three children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca.
Okay, so we're here with Matthew McLennigan. He is the president of Edgar. How you doing, Matthew?
Very well, gentlemen. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. Can you maybe start by telling our listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Sure. How deep do you want me to go?
All the way back.
All the way back. Sure. Yeah, like you said, Matthew McLennigan, I'm the president of Edgar Development, father of three, and working in this crazy real estate landscape that we're in today. But to your point, if you want to go back, I cut my teeth in the sales and marketing. I was with a group called Fifth Avenue Real Estate Marketing for about 10 years. And from there, I moved over to more of the development acquisition world with a group called Solterra Development. And about 6, maybe 7 years ago, I joined up with Peter Edgar as part of Edgar Development and really came on as the VP development acquisitions. And just as we've been growing the company, moved more into a president role. And here we are today.
What years were you at Solterra?
Would have been 2010 about 10 years. I think it was started about 2010. Yeah.
That's a lot of projects. I'm just thinking.
Yeah. Certainly in the sales and marketing, you get so much exposure in the beginning. And I'm really, I'm proud and I really cherish that time in that part of the industry. Just the exposure of working with so many different developers and different motivations. It was interesting because when I started working with Solterra, Jerry Nichelli, the owner, called me up one day and said, "Hey, let's go for a coffee." And so I met him and he said, "Hey, listen, I'm looking for somebody to help out with development and with acquisitions." And I said, "Oh, okay, well, let me give it some thought. If I know anybody, I'll let you know." I almost lost the job before I had it. He's like, "Don't be a fool. I'm asking you."
That's an interesting point, Matthew, because I was actually going to kind of go in that direction. So you start in sales and marketing. How did you transition out of sales and marketing? And I guess just as another question, were you interested in real estate or sales and marketing or both? Like, how did you even get into the industry?
Sure. Yeah. To take a step back from that, my mom was in real estate. So she was a real estate agent. We grew up in Tawasin. They built a few homes. Mom was very active in the resale and in the new home space. And so you just kind of pick it up by osmosis. And yeah, it was something that I sort of gravitated to. And if we're being totally transparent, I was, of the mindset, and I still am, of sort of school of hard knocks. It was just an opportunity to kind of get out there and get working as opposed to, being in the classroom. So my classroom was really just boots on the ground and getting out there and getting into it. So I did a few years with mom in the resale market, and then just met the right people. And there was an opportunity with Fifth Avenue Real Estate Marketing, which was under Mark Belling at the time. And I guess he saw some potential, and I said, "Listen, I want to, I'm not looking for the big paycheck. I'm interested and I want to learn. Let's, if you give me an opportunity, let me prove you wrong." And it was great. It was a great launch pad into sort of eventually getting development. And I always had that interest in, construction and in development. So it was just a good place to be, especially with the market back then was different too, like how business was done. Like, we were on site. The level of pre-sales, certainly in the wood frame, you would start construction typically before you would start your pre-sales. So I was on site, very active, and really took an interest in construction and in development. So I was fortunate where I was surrounded by good site supers and good developers where I was asking questions, and they were more than happy to really like, "Hey, kid, if you want to learn, come in the office and, come grab a coffee and I'll sort of teach you a few things."
I feel like that's so important in our industry, is like the school of hard knocks, or like coming, like actually just, boots on the ground, actually doing things and seeing how things are done. Yeah. Did you have a mentor that like was a key figure in your transition into the industry and eventually into development?
Yeah, I would say certainly, like, again, probably back to the opportunity of Mark Belling giving me sort of like, 20 years old, didn't know much about anything, kind of giving me an opportunity to be on a sales floor and take the lead. I thought, that was a great opportunity. Certainly with the guys at Solterra, again, that opportunity and really like, "Hey, we like you, we trust you, we'll teach you the rest." So I think, those people were certainly mentors, but certainly also appreciate just the opportunities that were, I would like to think they saw something in me to sort of bring me on board. But without sounding too corny, mom and dad, mom just sort of, again, learning that sort of industry by osmosis, and dad is a commercial fisherman and, hardworking guy. He used to always say to me, like, "There's only one way, and that's the hard way." and you know what he meant by that? Was looking back, I thought he just, wanted me to just work harder. But I think what he meant there was, no shortcuts. Right. And I see that as a common thread with a lot of the guys, back to that mentor question, like all the successful people that I've worked with, they don't take shortcuts.
Right.
They're up early, they stay late. If they don't know the answer, they figure it out. And I think part of it too is you have kind of mini mentors, I find. Like, you surround yourself with good people, right? Sometimes it's just one person. There's certainly one person that could be a catalyst, but, and this is a Peter Edgar philosophy too, of like, surround yourself with good people, on all facets of consultants, your lawyers, your construction group, and even just down to a personal level, right? Like-minded people that want to work hard and be successful and, boots to the ground.
Ron, can for people who aren't as familiar with Edgar, and I guess, well, not necessarily Peter Edgar, but Edgar Developments, can you talk a little bit about what you guys are up to and where you've been, where you are, and where you're going?
You bet. Yeah, Peter founded the company in 2009, primarily a purpose-built rental group. We have offices in Vancouver and Edmonton. So multiple rental towers in Edmonton, very active here in Vancouver. If you guys know the Duke building just off of Kingsway, that's got a really cool piece of like a public art mural on, I guess, with the north side of the building. Yeah. And then they started out as a purpose-built rental. And that was sort of ahead of its time, right? No one was really building rental. If you kind of look back, no one was really building rental around that time.
Even when the Duke came out, I feel like that was kind of made a splash because it was one of the only purpose-built rentals built in kind of a cool spot.
Yeah. And the different times, we'll probably get to that eventually. But yeah, costs were different, fees were different, right? So they really forged ahead with purpose-built rental. When I joined Peter in 2018, the dates are starting to come back to me now, guys. When I joined Peter in 2018, you know, he said, listen, I want to grow the company. I want to get into, you know, some of the larger master plan strata type of work. Do you want to join up and join forces? And you can sort of really take that on, because that's where I have all the experience in. So since then, we certainly, you know, focus on purpose-built rental. But we've also expanded our group to really get into some really fun master plan, large scale communities. So we're very active out in Port Moody right now. We have a 24 acre master plan site. It's approximately 2,500 homes. We have about 550 under construction right now. And we are about to break ground on another 140 market rental homes there. So again, we're still very active and very bullish on market rental. And we have another large scale site in New Westminster called Columbia Square, which is a transit orientated 7 acre surface park shopping center, which, as you guys would know, that's a bit of a unicorn these days to find 7 acres on transit, very underutilized. So we acquired that about 3 years ago, and we successfully completed the third reading, which allows us to build up to 3.3 million square feet of density.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's the rest of your career.
Pete, but I don't know if Pete said to me once, he goes, do we want to be a Nick Cage or do we want to be a Leonardo DiCaprio? do we want to make one or two really good movies, or do we want to do a whole bunch of just all ones? But you know what? In all seriousness, I'm apologies if I'm going on a tangent, but that's you know, you need those base hits though too. That's also important. So we certainly have some large scale master plan, but we also, you know, if you want to give it a sports analogy, we do have the base hits too, where there's some other smaller strip malls that are path of development that could be a single tower, or you know, we're also looking for, you know, 6-story wood frame out in the valley. So, you know, I like to think that we sort of take a multi-pronged approach to what we look at.
Like, what's the end goal with the market rental? Are you retaining these buildings, or are you selling them, or?
Historically, Edgar has been more of a merchant developer on rental, and I think that just comes with being a young company, because you don't have the horsepower to hold them, and you know, the horsepower being the equity to hold them, right? It's more of a merchant approach. We've certainly changed that. Our construction now and our acquisitions are for long term.
And Matthew, you know, it's interesting to think you mentioned you're still bullish on rental, purpose-built rental. Clearly, the acquisitions and what you're kind of the journey you're actually sounds like kind of early stages on with Edgar. Bullish on Vancouver real estate long term. Maybe before we talk about the market right now, has that bullish view been modified in any way over the last couple of years, or do you still kind of have a long term vision of Vancouver real estate that's kind of held true for say the last decade?
Yeah, you know, I could probably answer that question two ways. Yes and no. I mean, yes, we are bullish on Vancouver. I mean, look, I'm looking out my window right now. Blue sky, mountains, ocean. You know, the city needs a little bit of work, but I think we live in an amazing place. And I was at a UDI, this was years ago now, but I remember Bob Rennie saying, you know, when, and this was I've been in this almost 30 years now. So yeah, I've been through a few sort of ebbs and flows. And he made a good point of, the developers always run faster than the market does. And so bullish in the sense of we don't feel it right now, but there will be a supply shortage, and it's not a tomorrow, next month, maybe not next year, but it will happen because we have, we have the housing starts have stopped. And ignoring the CMHC stats for a moment, the actual new cranes that are going to come up, that has slowed down. So I'm bullish in that sense to let's start that process now. Let's get the rezonings and the building permits and start construction, because by the time you get through that process, building homes is not overnight, process here, right? So if we were to start something sooner or later, I think a completed building in 3 to 4 years from now will be in a very good position, because there won't be those housing starts and there will be a supply shortage. And it's hard to think about that right now. So when I was kind of joking about the no part is it is challenging just because the buildings are taking a lot more equity and policies are making things a lot more challenging to deliver. If we're talking rental, on an affordability basis, right? There's bad policies out there that are making rent more expensive. And so that's the challenge. But again, if I had to go one way or the other, I would certainly take the bullish route and take some risk. And I do believe that the market will be strong.
And maybe as a second part of Matt's question, how's the market right now? Just in your take on the current state of the market?
It's soft, for sure. I think the old uncertainty word, we've probably heard it 100 times, but yeah, there's uncertainty out there right now, and that causes people to pause. And I think there's sometimes that self-fulfilled prophecy where maybe it's not that bad for you, but you pick up the paper or, you talk to a friend or, the general vibe out there that isn't that great. So it causes you to pause. So it's quiet. I do know that it does feel like things are picking up a little bit. Certainly the last 3 weeks on some of our sites, we are seeing more activity. People are coming through a bit more optimism in the sense of, hey, listen, I haven't made a decision in a year, but I'm at a point now where I do need to make a decision. I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable. They've done their sales center tours. I think they've got a good vibe that, yes, there are some deals and some discounts, but for the most part, people aren't giving anything away in regards to the large discounts that people think that they're going to get. There's certainly lots of incentives. So I think when people get out there now, they're feeling like, there's maybe the uncertainty is the new certainty. People are starting to make some decisions and purchase and move forward.
No, totally. Yeah.
And so it sounds like I was going to ask about kind of where we're at in this market cycle. It sounds like, would you pinpoint the bottom as potentially behind us?
I think we're close. I'm more optimistic than some. I think we're close. Does that mean it's going to get really awesome? I would say if we're not at the bottom, I think that we're close. And I think we may bumble around the bottom for a little while longer, for sure. And that's okay. I think as long as we know where it is, I think we've got to get rid of some of, maybe not get rid of, not the right word, but certainly move through some of the standing inventory. If there is a certain community or a certain development that maybe has discounted their pricing or more highly incentivized than others, I think once you sort of get through some of that type of product and you get back to some normalcy of for the most part, we're all fairly consistent, right? We all use the same numbers, right? It's your hard costs, your soft costs, your land. We do need to make a profit. I don't have any other secret sauce than my peer does, right? So I think we will get back to, again, I think there are some deals out there and maybe some, a bit more inventory than there should be. And maybe somebody with some stats could probably back that one up in regards to sort of some of the levels. But, I think once we get through that, we're going to get back to a normalcy of everyone kind of back on that same playing field.
I share your thoughts about the last 3 weeks, like seeing more activity. And then the other thing that was interesting to me, I won't name the project, but I was out at a project yesterday that, they've come off from kind of where their peak was for their asking prices, about 15% or so. But now they've got everything is under contract. They've got backup offers on everything. They've kind of hit that price point where
you know, there's a real market for it. So it's like that idea that if you've adjusted your prices to the market, there's a market there now. So it does feel like we are kind of circling bottom, if not there, right? So
yeah.
Can we talk about why the challenges in the, like Adam's talking about, you know, coming off on price? Why is development so challenged right now? And I think it's everyone kind of sees the same thing, right? Like there's projects being canceled. There's not a lot of new pre-sale launches right now. Prices have come off, but, you know, I don't know. Is it policy, affordability, financing, all of the above, none of the above?
Depends how much time you have.
This market so challenging. No buyers.
Depends how much time you have. All of the above. You guys have heard this before, right? It's the cost of delivery, right? It is, you know, and this isn't just an overnight thing. This has been layered on for, you know, a lot of years, right? There's some bad policy. Again, you know, the statement of the 30%+ of the cost of a home goes towards fees and taxes, and it's been slowly creeping up, and the market has been able to sort of pick that up in regards to getting, you know, if there's a policy that adds $20-$30 a foot to the cost of a home, the development industry or the housing industry rather, or try to get away from saying development. I think housing is, I feel like the word developer has been you know, sort of vilified, but the housing industry has been able to sort of adjust to that, you know, as sort of the momentum or prices have increased along with those charges. I think we're at a point now where you're at that breaking point where the market being just people with income and a normal job have said, listen, it's too much. You know, maybe 2-3 years ago at X dollars per foot, I could stretch. And now we're getting to a point where it's just getting a little bit more than where the market could bear. And I don't want to go too into the weeds on all the things you just noted. But yeah, certainly like there's just bad policy. And I'll give you one, and I don't want to rant too much, but you look at something like an inclusionary housing policy. Yes, it's great. The intent is there. It's well intended. But when you say, well, you build a rental building, but 20% of those homes have to be at an affordable rate. In order to do so, that other 80% of those homes have to pick up the slack for that. So yes, you're getting a lower rental rate on these 20%, but those other 80% now have to pop that up. Whereas if we had built just a 100% market rental building, you could average back down. You get what I'm saying? Like if you, those inclusionary homes, you have to average the balance of the building up. Whereas if you were just 100% market rental, you're now sort of at a more of an even playing field. And again, I'm not saying what's right or wrong. We need affordability, no question. But to put it solely on the backs of either a home builder or the other, you know, the general 80% of those tenants that are, you know, working hard just to make ends meet, I don't think that's good policy.
This is the thing about places like in New York City that I've never understood, where somebody, you know, it's like a family gets a rent-controlled property that, you know, they spend their entire life protecting it because it's so valuable. Whereas the guy down the street is paying, you know, 19 times more in rent or whatever. It just seems like there's, without going into right or wrong, I like that. It's just like somebody's got to pay for it.
Yeah.
And if it's a developer, you're not going to build it unless you can make a profit, because it's just like the logic of the business.
Yeah.
Or it's the 80% of the building that has to pay more in rent to subsidize the others,
yeah,
who are either in need or lucky enough to acquire one, or however it actually, those get doled out. But it seems like such a, I don't know, there's got to be a better way. Although I'm not sure anyone solved it. But.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see that in older rental stock, where again, kind of loaded conversation where, you know, yes, there's a threshold on how much you should be able to increase the rent annually. But also if you minimize what that increase is, it pushes that CapEx onto the new tenant. So the second somebody leaves, I got to make it up now. And so I think that's what you're getting at, Matt, is your those other homes now are picking up the slack of the other percentage that are paying a below market rent. and it's challenging, right? And then it goes back to the landlord being vilified that they have to charge higher rent, but it does have to come from somewhere. We work with non-for-profits. We're big advocates of that. We're getting very active into that. But at the same time, not all of the private sector has to be non-for-profit. You know, like you said, if I open up a hot dog stand and I go get a business loan, I got to go to that bank to prove that I make a profit. I'm not selling hot dogs at a loss. So it's, you know, like the developer gets vilified that, oh, gee, you made a profit. It's like, well, I don't really have much of a choice in the sense of if I go to a lender, do I have a choice if I'm a non-for-profit? Yes. But I'm saying if I go as a viable business and go to a lender, I need to show that I make a profit. It's just, right. I don't think you have to go to school to figure that one out.
Well, and like last week we found out about River District and West Group canceling a project that I think they'd already excavated the site.
If I heard you, right? I think it was 50% yeah. sold too.
Well, yeah. And I mean, now we're seeing it, right? Like if the numbers don't pencil, like, you know, large developers like West Group just won't build. So what motivates you in a market like this to keep moving forward and keep developing or keep building?
Gosh, I need a couch and a pillow.
Yeah, lie down. Fetal position.
What more? I think it, you know, very similar answer to what we were saying before was I do think it's, you know, I think we live in a beautiful city. I think the table setting in regards to where we live, just, you know, take a macro Canada, British Columbia down into Vancouver. Like, I do believe we live in a great place. And again, it's funny. Our Henry's Peter Edgar, his brother Henry, comes out from Edmonton, and he goes, every time I'm here, he goes, like, you know, I stay in the hotel and I go walk on the seawall. He goes, man, he goes, I have such faith in this Vancouver market, because like you forget what you have, right? Like, it is a really great place to live. So I think as developers, we're a little bit, you know, I think we're eternal optimists. I think we sort of have to be. I don't really have a choice. I don't know anything else. So, you know, but, you know, we are our company. We are doing a few different things where, you know, yes, we acknowledge that the market is slower and we're not building the, you know, as many rental buildings or as much strata as we want to. But that said, we've started a new division of Edgar where we're more, if you want to just kind of, it's fee for service work where there are non-for-profits. There's groups that are either very well capitalized or they have an idea, whether it's a construction company that wants to be more active or a non-for-profit. So we've been branching that out and really doing like a fee-for-service work. We got really bright people in our office, great analysts, great development team, great construction, our VP construction, really bright guy. So we've been actually out there consulting and sort of, you know, being a development manager for other groups. And so that's kept us quite busy.
What about the Edmonton? Is that just a family? It sounds like there might just be a family kind of component. Was that strategic with the start of Edgar? Like, we're going to be in two cities, Vancouver, Edmonton? Or was it, you know, one brother's in Edmonton, one brother's in Vancouver?
Yeah.
What's the connection there? And has it helped, I guess, over the course of the last 3 to 5 years? Because Edmonton's had a pretty decent run, as I understand.
Yeah. The family, I mean, very simply, the family's from Edmonton. So I think when Peter started, Edgar Development, it was just, he knew the little land out in Edmonton and there was a rental market. And so they were quite active out there. Now the family flies, you know, their own flags, but they're both very active in certain projects together.
Wait, can we just go back? I think we've kind of maybe talked about this on the show before, but this conversation's really early. Kind of made me think more about, you know, the 80-20 split and, you know, the idea of the hot dog stand, and you don't have to go to school to understand this. Like, all these things that seem inherent, like obviously true, right? And yet I was on a Reddit post the other day about, does your landlord increase the rent every year? And it was like a question to a Reddit thread, and every person underneath, no, sounds like your landlord is a jerk. No, I would never. I really vet my landlord as much as anything else. And every answer was like, you know, acted like as if there's like this this capital that's just there to subsidize. Like, it never said, well, strata fees go up every year, basically, or inflation over the last couple of years has went up actually quite a bit more than you can raise your rent. Like, there wasn't a single person, me included, that went in there to try and, you know, fight on behalf of landlords. But I guess just making me think of, because if we were talking about hot dogs, that wouldn't be the comment section, right? Like, why is there so much emotion and almost blind spots when it comes to housing, do you think? Is it because it's people's homes? Like, is it the human right kind of element of it? Because it seems to me like, you know, we've talked to Bo Jarvis recently and Daryl Simpson, and everybody's kind of circling around the same, you know, the narratives about developer has to change and things like that. And there needs to be a better understanding, but there's almost like a willful blindness when it comes to housing. Like, people just don't want to understand. I don't know. I'm kind of talking out loud, but any thoughts on that, Matthew?
No, that's a good point. I think it's a personal, I mean, what gets more personal than home?
Yeah.
Right. And so I did listen to Bo's podcast, and it was great. He really articulates, you know, a lot of that. I don't want to try to compete with him because he certainly can articulate like all of the challenges that our industry is facing right now. But he touched on it, like, about how the greedy developer, the developers vilified, and you know, the cities, the municipality, province, federal. I don't want to pinpoint any, you know, I want to get too micro, but generally speaking, government has been also greedy. Right. So I don't want to maybe not micro it down to a municipality, but government has been greedy too. Right. These are a lot of fees that get passed on to either a tenant or a homeowner. But it gets reflected that, oh, it's the developer collecting these fees. And that's not necessarily the case. So I think we have been doing a better job bringing that to light the last few years. I certainly feel like we've been advocating this for as long as I can remember. I can't think of a rezoning or a development where we haven't gone to staff and to council to say, listen, it's you're extracting too much out of this development, and it's going to make it like that. That's we've been doing that for decades, and with that the argument of it's adding to the cost of the home, and now we're questioning, you know, where's that threshold? Again, I think there's been some luck where, you know, the value of the homes have been able to increase with the level of taxation and policy that have been put on the homes. So you know, I think we've, you know, again, I think we've been talking about this for years internally, but I think I want to say we need to do, but I think we are doing a better job of bringing that to light.
Hey everyone, pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown, and we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia,
serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakland, please reach out to us at oakland.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much, and we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Maybe shifting gears a little bit, Matthew, bright spots in the market or areas that you're excited about right now?
If you're talking just on a personal level, I think what we're doing with Edgar in regards to some of the fee-for-service work and getting out there and working with different groups, that's been a real bright spot for me personally, because you get sort of stuck in what you know, whereas we're expanding with new relationships, sort of a different way to do business. So I think that has been very exciting. Bright spots kind of on that same thread, you know, hopefully fingers crossed, we learn more about the Builds Canada and where some of this relief can come from. Because I don't know if it's going to come from the municipal level. I think it's got to trickle down federal, provincial, and then into the municipal level. Because they do, you know, in a little bit of their defense, they do, you know, this is a revenue source for them, like development cost charges, CACs, or now it's an ACC, but those are revenue streams for them. We don't know where some of it goes. That's not a super transparent process, but you know, maybe to help bring down affordability or temper some of that is, you know, the federal government has to step in. And this is what they've been saying, devil will be in the details, but okay, let's help contribute to some of those infrastructure costs and help temper that. You know, I don't think we're going to see a 30% reduction in housing anytime soon, because they're going to step in and take care of all those fees. But even if you can, you know, just pour a little bit of water on the fire there and sort of, you know, you know, temporary, right? So I'm the bright spot to answer your question is, you know, I think some of the things that we're doing, hopefully some of the things that the feds and the province can help chip in. If you're talking micro in regards to like just the actual real estate market, I think end user is really the predominant buyer out there right now. A little bit of luck, we happen to have, you know, end user product that we're building. And I think it's a good thing. I think that, you know, maybe it gives us a chance to reflect and just make sure that we're, you know, building the right product for the right type of user.
Does this change the way developers approach projects in the future? Like, I mean, now it seems to me like end user product is a bit of a hedge moving forward.
Well, certainly the investor right now is for a number of reasons, you know, the investor is not really in the market right now. I think you don't want to be too targeted because these are big projects and they take a long time to, I think you still have to think, like, you know, I kind of call it the umbrella or even a bit of an insurance policy once in a while, where I think you don't want to be too targeted on you know, the people that are purchasing the homes that we build. Just because the rezonings take a long time. So you're kind of committed to certainly the unit mix and unit sizes very early on before you even start selling, right? Like you submit a development permit, nothing really happens for 18 to 24 months. That's kind of already set the table on your parking ratios and your unit mix or unit sizes. And then you got to go out there and sell it, and then you got to build it. And, you know, for the most part, you're not selling out the whole building. You're going to have, you know, standing inventory. So that process could take you, you know, two to five, 7 years, depending on the size of your project, right? So I think, you know, certainly we'll see shifting more towards end user, but not 100%. I think we still need to give ourselves some flexibility that have some price point homes or some, you know, studios and, you know, just not, we're not building all three bedrooms. Let me put it that way.
I know this isn't by any means what Edgar focuses on, but we've been getting this question a lot right now. It seems like we're in this moment where, you know, if you drive around, a lot of multiplexes seem to be underway, but the market hasn't really, there's no verdict on how buyers are embracing or not embracing the multiplex.
Yeah.
And also there seems to be a lot of confusion around like price per foot for that finished product. And people are having a tough time performing the different, you know, regions. Any thoughts on the multiplex or just do you like
it's not really our space that we play in. But I think just generally holistically, I think it's a positive. I think it, you know, a blanket policy to say just put it everywhere, I think might be a little bit extreme, but I think in the right circumstances, and again, it's not going to work on every lot anyway. What I do know about is, I mean, it's like anything, whether it's a big building or a small building, you know, there are restrictions in regards to setbacks, and you want to make sure you have enough room in your living room, or you don't want a 6-foot living room. Like, you know, there's going to be limitations in regards to the land that you're building a multiplex on. Parking is another one, right? Like, I don't know how, and I appreciate the whole point is get people out of their cars, but I don't think we're quite there yet. So putting a 6-plex on a very small, quiet street, I think loading up the whole street with that, with 6-plexes might become a challenge, even from an infrastructure standpoint and from a parking standpoint. I'm not suggesting that's certainly happening, but just, you know, I think, long story short, I think there's a place for it, 100%. I think it's a good thing. But again, it's just not really a space that we play in.
What neighborhoods are you really excited about or municipalities right now? I feel like Port Moody or New West would be two that would come to mind. And I know you guys are active there, but are there certain areas of Metro Vancouver you're like, man, this is exciting right now?
Yeah. I mean, selfishly, Port Moody to plug it. But all joking aside, like sincerely, I think it is a great community. I think like you're on the inlet there. There's lots of great things, you know, really good community. Somebody said to me recently, it's kind of like they say Main Street meets North Shore.
Right. I think I've heard also Deep Cove meets East Van.
I heard East Van and Deep Cove have a baby. the way that it was explained to me.
Let's just spend the rest of the show trying to describe.
You know, who's having babies? Yeah. I hope that the Vancouver proper, City of Vancouver can come back and we can see some more starts here. I think it's a great, like, I'm talking like city of Vancouver, not Metro Vancouver. I think it's a great city. I certainly, you know, graduate high school, you get out of mom and dad's house and you move downtown and sort of live that life and had lots of fun. And it was, you know, very social. And you could buy, you know, you could buy a condo for $300-$400 a foot or $500,000. I mean, now you're in this sort of, if you want to build something downtown, it needs to be $2,500 or $3,000 a foot. I don't know how we get back there, but my wish is that we can get back to some, you know, a see a tower launch again, like the old days where, you know, it was attainable. I love, you know, some of the new buildings in our skyline. I think they're amazing. And I think they're great for the city, but it shouldn't be the only type of housing that we're building. Right. So again, how we get there, that's a loaded, we probably need a few more podcasts for that, but it would be nice to see, you know, that part of the market in downtown come back.
You know, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody this morning. For context, we just moved offices from Cambie Village, which is great, but we were there. We were downtown. We went to Cambie Village, start of COVID, I guess, 2019, maybe. We just went back downtown. So spending a lot more time downtown. And like it's still downtown, right? You're like, this is a great, like we're right. All over on Homer. And it's like, this is just an awesome, like I love Cambie Village, but man, downtown, like I'm like, this is
good
way
to be back in Yale Town.
Yeah. Yes. Good to be back.
Yeah. I was out at Elisa last night. There was an advisory board that I sit on. And so we were in the back there, like in a sort of a quiet room. And then I walked out around 9 o'clock and it was packed.
Yes.
Patio, the whole room, the bar. And then I walked to the front door and there's people over. I'm like, and I'm in the stage of life with three young kids and that. So my nightlife is it's non-existent. But just for a Monday, it really floored me. I was like, holy, okay, like this feels good. Like, and not just not that one particular space, like Yale Town itself, people were moving around. I felt like, again, maybe just a bit of ignorance, but I felt like I hadn't seen that in a while.
Last night is so funny. I was out last night in a different context. I was with a kid at a swimming lesson in the North Shore, but had to drive through downtown on the way home. And it was packed last night. Downtown was busy. I don't know, especially for a Monday night, but it kind of made me feel like, 2015 or whatever the years are that I kind of look back at as fantastic years in the city.
Always sunny.
But people were out and walking. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I remember the very first condo, again, back to the attainability, the very first condo, it was a Boza Properties building. And that would have been early 2000s. And it was, I want to say, $300 a foot. I was able to buy a 500 square foot one-bedroom home with parking for under $300,000.
Yeah. I remember there's a family I know and the kids are all about 3 or 4 years apart. And the oldest got a two-bed and the second kid got a one-bed and the third kid got a bachelor and they all spent the same amount of money. And, you know, just yeah. every couple of years or whatever.
Downsizing. Yeah.
But it happened quickly.
Matthew, in real estate, they say buy the rumor and sell the news. Adam, you should be the one asking this.
Really. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. This question has flopped now 6 episodes in a row, and it's very close to getting cut. Unless there's something really great on the other side of this, Matthew. In real estate, they say buy the rumor and sell the news. What's the rumor or something that you're monitoring out there that you're thinking might impact the market?
Okay, well, I'm confident that it's getting better out there, and I know I'm the one in the 100, and probably going to get some text message after saying what. But you know what, I'm okay to spread the rumor and say that you know what, I think we're going to get it's going to get better sooner than we think. How's that? That's a nice middle ground.
Yeah, and when it gets better, I wonder, do we see a bit of a dog pile as we have in other years? Or does it, like, what I'm really curious about is how we move into a more kind of balanced market.
I think we're going to get there organically. I think that it's just, you know, I think gone are the years of selling a building out on a Saturday. And so again, I think our policies have to change. I think how we finance things, how we, like Redma, you know, changing from the 12 months to 18 months is positive. Those type of changes are going to help things. So I think we're going to get back to, and it's sad to say, because those were fun days back in you know, the sales and marketing. I used to work in, just on a quick side note, I used to, part of what we did was in resort sales. And so we used to take reservation deposits. So I was explaining this to some of the young guys in the office. I said, you know, I said, just to get to the presentation center, you used to have a write a $5,000 to $10,000 check just to come see us. I said, we would market you for 30 to 60 days. And then if you wanted to come see the presentation center, we'd ask for a reservation deposit just to get you an appointment time. They couldn't wrap their heads around that. So then we'd sell it all on one. We'd sell it all on a Saturday.
Matt and I used to pay people to sleep outside for first positions at projects.
Yeah. Like wristbands, all that stuff, right? Like it was. I would love to get back to that place. And I'm half joking, but I think we're going to get back to just some normalcy. And I think for the most part, our industry is fine with that. There's nothing wrong. I would take normalcy and consistency over selling out on a Saturday or not selling anything for, you know what I mean? Like the extreme of blowing something out and the extreme of like going, you know, there's nobody here, right? Like I think to kind of maybe I go back to the question, if I'm answering it correctly, the answer was, you know, I think there's going to be a new normal that will just happen organically. And I think it'll be a little bit more of, hopefully, like an aggressive tempo sale program. You guys know what I mean when I say that. Like, you know, just, you know, I need to sell 100 homes, but I, you know, if I can sell, you know, 9 to 10 a month, that's more than happy, right? And that's the way it used to be. You know, when I was out in the Valley, very early days with Mark Belling, if we could sell we would build, you know, 100 unit townhouse site. And if we could sell a townhome or two a weekend, that was successful, right? You do your open house on the weekend and then people call you back Monday, Tuesday, and they would come in and write something. And it was consistent. And we knew from a financing, a construction schedule, what we could deliver as opposed to like the Wild West, right? On both sides, like good and bad, right?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me, Matthew. That aggressive tempo. I like it. Let's go.
Win that one. That just came loose. I'm going to write that one down.
2026.
Aggressive tempo.
2035 being an aggressive tempo. That
would be we have a lot of work to do to get. We do have a lot of work on rallying, you know, the federal, province, and municipal levels to kind of get us back to that point. So I don't want to sugarcoat it. There's a lot of work to do, but again, I just feel like, I think to be in this industry, you have to be an eternal optimist. But again, you know, I hope we get there.
Fantastic. Well, we do have this segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions to end the program. Do you have time to stick around for that?
I do. You betcha.
This podcast is sponsored by Jethro Condos in downtown Langley. Over 100 homes under $425,000 with one-bedroom suites starting at $399,900.
Here's what's incredible, Adam. These condos actually cash flow. When's the last time we could say that about new construction in the Lower Mainland? With these entry-level prices, the numbers actually work for investors.
And you're in the heart of downtown Langley, surrounded by trendy cafes, artisan bakeries, and parks. The area is experiencing incredible growth and new development.
Yeah, the location is absolutely key. Jethro is steps from the future Langley SkyTrain station. Get in before that transit connection transforms the area. Because once that SkyTrain arrives, you're looking at direct connections across the Lower Mainland.
Jethro is a Whitetail Homes project. Whitetail Homes has over 25 years of experience with quality construction and finishes that exceed expectations. We're talking vibrant interiors, expansive windows, and thoughtful design.
For realtors listening, they are offering amazing cooperative incentives. This is a rare opportunity where the fundamentals make sense. Affordable entry, cash flow potential, and positioned for major transit infrastructure, an all-around win.
Register at jethrocondos.ca. That's Jethro condos.ca.
Jethro Condos, distinctly Langley, uniquely yours.
All right. Well, question number one, one book that you've read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
One book. Well, I have to say, I listened to your few of your recent podcasts, and I had a hunch this might come up. So I had to scramble to think what books I've read lately. And there are very few. You know, it's funny. Pete always buys me books, and he'll probably have to listen to this podcast one day, and he'll get mad because I'm not reading his books. But Amor Towles.
The
Lincoln Highway and Gentleman in Moscow. So, you know, something easy. I always say, like, my friends bug me because, like, I'm the guy that reads, like, the People magazines and the Us magazines, because, like, just something to, like, temper the brain, you know? Like, I feel like I get up and it's go, you know? It's reading municipal documents and legal documents. And if I sit down and just want to, like, rest the brain, it's usually a little bit of nonsense. I am listening to an ebook, and the name's me, but that's interesting. It's more of him telling his own story. So I'm not a total dummy, but I do appreciate a good, something intelligent. But the name of the ebook has slipped me now, but the Ray Dalio is an interesting cat.
Nice. Interesting guy for sure. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
I think I've reinforced some positive habits, which are, I think, exercise. I think we're going deep on the philosophy here, but I think exercise is an important part of the day for all of us. So I do, I'm pretty consistent on it. That's kind of my regulator. I can get revved up. I like to think I'm calm, but I can get revved up pretty quick too and get anxious. So exercise is a habit that I truly believe in, like prioritizing making that time. And just on the priority thing, I think just prioritizing on what's in front of me. And that could be anything. That's a life thing. I think work, family, just be present in what you're... and so that's just a reminder that I try to, habits. I just, try to think of on the daily, what are good habits that I need to kind of... Because it's easy to get lazy or on a number of fronts, physically or mentally. So just prioritizing both the physical and being present, I think... on a personal level, but even professionally, I just think it's good for all of us to just be present, because it's hard to do now, right? We got phones and, my wife bugs me. She's like, the news is on the TV and then you have your phone, you're reading the news on your phone. Like what, like, yeah. You're, what exactly are you paying attention to right now?
Yeah, it's not only deep thinking, it's I know you can't even now people just can't watch movies anymore even. That's a great one. Question number three for you, Matthew. What have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
Binge watching, the recent binge watch was The Studio.
Oh, yeah. I guess this just won the Emmy, right? But I just watched the first episode last night. It was really funny, really great.
It's good. It's good. I was binge watching another one. I think it's called Stick with Owen Wilson. He's a washed up or retired golfer.
Yeah.
But I fizzled. I have 3-4 episodes. I was like, kind of felt a little bit more of the same. So another one I like is Tulsa King.
Huh.
You know that one? That's a Sheridan. That's a Sheridan one too. It's with Stallone. And he's like a mafia guy in some like some middle America town, whatever. But that's a cool one. I really like that one. But Sheridan, he does some good stuff.
Yeah. Just follow him along, I guess. It's
usually if I'm on a plane to Toronto, is usually when I get some of my binge watching.
Nice. What are you listening to these days? If you're music wise.
I'm pretty across the board. I'm pretty what's in the moment. A lot of Chris Cornell lately. You know, Chris Cornell.
Yeah.
He's like a Soundgarden.
R.I.P. Yeah.
If I'm exercising, either some house or some good old rock, like some Linkin Park or Rage, get it out of the system.
I don't think I appreciated how good of a voice Chris Cornell had
Right?
I was older.
Yeah, he's got some really great acoustic stuff.
Have we all watched the Nothing
Sinead
Compares
O'Connell
to You?
Yeah. Or that's a Prince cover.
I think that's a Prince song. Yeah, but
yeah, Prince, Sinead,
YouTube,
and then
it's been viewed 100 billion times or something. But that's incredible.
Yeah.
Shows his range there. That's crazy.
Last but not least, Matthew, something that you've purchased for under $1,500 that's had a positive impact on your life.
You know what? Yeah, recently, not a ton. I've been really focusing on more like just, I have a very young family. And so it's really just experience-based right now. Just kind of getting out and like, you know, some little mini vacations. And they actually, now it probably cost more than $1,500, but just, you know, getting on the ferry and going up the coast and, you know, getting the kids out to Gibson or, you know, driving the interior and kind of do a day at the lake or a few days at the lake and that type of things. More so really experience kind of based. I can't really think of anything that, I'm sure there's probably some kitchen appliance in a drawer that I thought maybe would change my life. But I got nothing exciting for you. Sorry. I bought a blue blazer and then I hung it up in my closet next to the other blue blazer that I didn't realize I had. Exactly.
Well, how can people find out more about what you're up to? And of course, Edgar.
Call me anytime. Our website, edgardevelopment.com. Or sincerely, if we're always into, you know, meeting new people and new relationships. And like I was saying, I think we're open to dialogue, certainly across the industry. So
fantastic. Thank you so much for your time, Matthew. That was it was great having you on, and that was a fantastic conversation.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, guys.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with President over at Edgar Developments, Matthew McLennigan.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Matthew. Great having him on the show. Yeah, I feel like there was some uplifting moments there.
You know what? I would almost say we soared at certain points.
Yeah, exactly. You know what was funny though is I said this.
Good guy and lots of insights.
I said this during the show, but you know, I've had a few days since with that conversation to reflect, and the market does seem to be, we'll see what the stats say in September, but there seems to be definitely more momentum and activity out there, depending on the sub area and the product type, of course. I mean, we're not talking a huge uptick in the market, but I'm just noticing signs of life in the fall market. And I'm anecdotally hearing that from other agents as well. Tough to say on pre-sale, but certain projects seem to be relatively busy.
Well, Matthew seemed to point to higher activity over the last couple of weeks, which was nice. Yeah. But anyway, what else do we got for the day? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Of course, we have all our resources. Are we still doing that? I don't know. We're in a transition phase. We got private client services. This is a great resource for buyers. We have the sold plan for sellers.
Head to the website.
Really what we want is people that are enjoying the show or finding anything insightful or useful coming from it to either give us a rating or review wherever you listen to it or on Google, or share it with a friend. I feel like we're back in growth mode, and that's how we've grown in the past, and that's what we're asking for. If you enjoy the show, that's the best thing you can do apart from getting in touch.
For sure, man. And if anyone wants to get in touch, how can they reach out?
They can reach me at any point, 778-847-2854, or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574, or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, everyone. And we're back next week with another great episode.
Take care.
2000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.